When Jesus had again crossed over by boat to the other side of the lake, a large crowd gathered round him while he was by the lake. Then one of the synagogue leaders, named Jairus, came, and when he saw Jesus, he fell at his feet. He pleaded earnestly with him, "My little daughter is dying. Please come and put your hands on her so that she will be healed and live." So Jesus went with him. A large crowd followed and was pressed round him, and a woman was there who had been subject to bleeding for 12 years. She had suffered a great deal under the care of many doctors and had spent all she had, yet instead of getting better, she grew worse. When she heard about Jesus, she came up behind him in the crowd and touched his cloak, because she thought, "If I just touch his clothes, I will be healed." Immediately, her bleeding stopped, and she felt in her body that she was freed from her suffering. At once, Jesus realized that power had gone out from him. He turned round in the crowd and asked, "Who touched my clothes?" "You see the people crowding against you," his disciples answered, "and yet you can ask, 'Who touched me?'" But Jesus kept looking around to see who had done it. Then the woman, knowing what had happened to her, came and fell at his feet, and trembling with fear, told him the whole truth. He said to her, "Daughter, your faith has healed you. Go in peace and be freed from your suffering." While Jesus was still speaking, some people came from the house of Jairus, the synagogue leader. "Your daughter is dead," they said. "Why bother the teacher anymore?" Overhearing what they said, Jesus told him, "Don't be afraid, just believe." He did not let anyone follow him except Peter, James, and John, the brother of James. When they came to the home of the synagogue leader, Jesus saw a commotion with people crying and wailing loudly. He went in and said to them, "Why all this commotion and wailing? The child is not dead, but asleep." But they laughed at him. After he put them all out, he took the child's father and mother and the disciples who were with him and went in where the child was. He took her by the hand and said to her, "Talitha kum," which means, "Little girl, I say to you, get up." Immediately the girl stood up and began to walk around. She was 12 years old. At this they were completely astonished. He gave strict orders not to let anyone know about this and told them to give her something to eat.
Okay, well, do keep that open. We'll be looking at that passage from Mark's Gospel. My name's Tom. I'm one of the ministers here at St. Matthew's. I'll be leading the Life Explore course starting this coming week as well. We've got a question on the screen for you. Can faith really make a difference? Can faith really make a difference? I wonder how you'd answer that question if someone asked you. Now, I'm sure there'll be a variety of opinions in the room, but I suspect most of us would answer that faith does make a difference. Maybe we've felt it ourselves, or maybe if it's not true for us, maybe we've seen it in someone else. And if you've seen that difference, well, you're not alone. It's recognized widely. It's well noted in psychological and medical studies that having faith is good for us. As the atheist professor of psychology, Jonathan Haidt, puts it, let's go on to the next one, please. Surveys have long shown that religious believers in the United States, it's also true elsewhere in the world, are happier, healthier, longer lived, and more generous to charity and to each other than are secular people. Faith makes a difference. But let's sharpen the question a bit. If faith makes a difference, what sort of difference does it make? What sort of difference does faith make? Because I think that for many people, faith is just like this quote here. It makes a difference, but it's only there to make the world happier or nicer. It's good for us, like exercise or taking vitamins. And you can see that in how people pray. You know, so you see that they pray for Aunt Hilda to have a nice holiday, or for, you know, Donald from number 34 to get over his colds nice and quickly. Now, we can pray those things, but if that's all we pray, well then faith only makes a small difference. You know, they're prayers that don't ask too much of Jesus, because, you know, though we might not admit it out loud, we think that faith is only able to help with little things. Things that, realistically, might just get better on their own. That if we took to God all of our real problems, the things in our hearts and things in our lives, the big things, the deep things, the things that keep us up at night, well, then he might not be able to help. But that's why we must hear our reading from Mark's Gospel. Because Jesus is talking about the difference that faith makes to the big things in our world. Life and death, shame and restoration, and faith in Jesus, well, it makes all the difference. Believing in him has the power to completely transform our lives here and now. And it even has the power to live forever. But don't just take my word for it. Let's have a look at what the Bible says about it. And it's going to tell us three things about faith in Jesus. So, Sarah, if we can go on two slides, please. Thank you. Faith in Jesus is our only hope. He's the only one with the power to make a difference. No one else can do it. Faith in Jesus saves us from suffering and shame. This faith restores even the most broken things in our world, the deepest hurts, the rejection that we all fear. And faith in Jesus saves us from death. He's the one with the power to make a difference against our biggest enemy, the one that no one else has the power to stop, death itself. So let's go back to the top. Let's have a look. Faith in Jesus is our only hope. Let's read from verse 21. It's page 1007 in the Church Bibles. Verse 21. When Jesus had crossed over by boat to the other side of the lake, a large crowd gathered around him while he was by the lake. Now, Jesus has been traveling around Galilee, that region in Israel, teaching the crowds that followed him. And today is no different. But suddenly, the crowds part. Someone is coming. Verse 22, then one of the synagogue leaders named Jairus came. Now, this is why everyone's getting out of the way. Jairus is an influential, he's a powerful man. He's a big figure in the local community. But he's more than that, because he's a religious figure as well. He's the synagogue leader, a man of great devotion. And this is someone that everyone respects. Verse 22, then one of the synagogue leaders named Jairus came, and when he saw Jesus, he fell at his feet. Now, Jairus is a man of status. He's someone everyone else bows to, and yet he falls at Jesus' feet. He humbles himself before him in front of everyone. But why? Well, verse 23, he pleaded with him earnestly. My little daughter is dying. Please come and put your hands on her so that she will be healed and live. So Jesus went with him. Now, and suddenly it all makes sense, doesn't it? Here is a father that our hearts go out to. You know, a man in desperate need. Jairus has heard reports of Jesus, that he's able to make sick people better. And he needs Jesus because his beloved daughter is dying. I'm sure if we were in his position, we'd do exactly the same thing. So he begs Jesus to drop everything else and to come with him. Jairus comes to Jesus because he's got nowhere else to turn to. He puts his faith in Jesus because Jesus is his only hope. And now we're introduced to a second person. Let's read a bit more, middle of verse 24, and the start of that next paragraph. A large crowd followed and pressed round him, and a woman was there who had been subject to bleeding for 12 years. She had suffered a great deal under the care of many doctors and had spent all she had. Yet instead of growing better, she grew worse. Now just put yourself in this lady's shoes for a minute. 12 years ago, she starts bleeding. We don't know why, we don't know how, only that she started bleeding. And it must have hurt. But it's okay, because, you know, bodies heal, don't they? But the next morning comes and nothing's changed. Well, maybe it's a bit more serious, but nothing to worry about at this stage. And the next morning comes. And the next week comes. The next month comes. And nothing changes. She's still bleeding, and it won't stop. She goes to the doctor. You remember, there's no free healthcare when Jesus is alive. But she brings her bank card, and off she goes. She tries what they suggest, but nothing changes. She gets worse, not better. So she tries another doctor, and the bill gets bigger. And she still doesn't get any better. And another, and another, and another, and nothing changes. And she's still bleeding. She's getting more and more desperate. But she's getting worse and worse, and poorer and poorer. Until she's spent everything and achieved nothing. But there's more. In Jesus' time, if you were bleeding like this, you were considered unclean. You were a social outcast. Everything you touched, whether person or object, was also considered unclean, so friends and family pushed you away. You weren't welcome at home. You were a source of shame, a social pariah. And because you were unclean, you were barred from worship of God. You weren't welcome in the temple. This lady's sick, and her illness has ruined her health, her financial status, her personal life, her spiritual life. It's taken everything from her. But it's all right, because she's got a plan. Look at verse 27 again. When she heard about Jesus, she came up behind him in the crowd and touched his cloak, because she thought, if I just touch his clothes, I will be healed. And now she too has heard about Jesus and his amazing power to help. Maybe his power can restore her, unlike everyone else who's tried and failed. She puts her faith in Jesus, just as Jairus does, because Jesus is her only hope. I really like watching rugby, and I came across an interview with a former rugby player, a guy called Ryan Jones, a little while back. And when you saw him play, he was an absolute monster. He's a hugely physical specimen. He's 6'5", he's 115 kilos, what, 18 stone, seemingly indestructible. And yet a couple of years ago, age 41, he was diagnosed with early onset dementia. For even someone as indestructible as him, well, he's in big trouble. He said in this interview that you can see on the screen, I feel like my world is falling apart, and I'm really scared because I've got 3 children and 3 stepchildren. I want to be a fantastic dad. I live 15 years of my life like a superhero, and I'm not. I don't know what the future holds. Now, sadly, what's true for Ryan Jones is true for each of us, because we're all like someone in this story. And maybe we're like Ryan or like the woman, and we're already facing our lives falling apart, whether because of physical, social, financial ruin. Or maybe we're like Jairus, and we're watching as a loved one or friend faces death. It might not have happened just now, but I'm afraid I know that it'll happen to all of us one day. And the thing is, when that moment comes, the question is, where are we going to turn when that happens? What are we going to put our faith in? Now, some of us will be like the woman in the passage. We'll throw money at the problem. Just keep throwing it until it goes away. But one day there'll be something that money can't fix. Others of us will ignore it or say that, you know, this sort of thing doesn't happen to people like us. And we'll try to defeat it by willpower or sheer sort of bloody-mindedness. And there's a whole host of things we could turn to. I don't know what yours is. But everyone turns to something. Mark has been building a picture for us of the power of Jesus over these last few chapters. He has the power to defeat evil, to heal the sick, to forgive sins. Only he has the power to help. And so we need to come to him because he is our only hope. Because whatever else we turn to will eventually run out. Yet it's hard, even for Christians, because faith in Jesus means that those other things, well, they won't last forever. They can't do it. They have their limits. Medicine can't fix everything. Technology won't save us. There'll come a point where money can't make everything better. And it's hard. Because when we've got those things in our hands, when we've bought the medicine or fixed the things ourselves, we control what happens and when. And yet to say, actually, I'm going to let go of that. It's not that those are bad things. It's not that we can't use them, but we need to recognize that they're not ultimate things. And put our faith in Jesus, and that's hard. Because even though we can know that Jesus is good, it calls us to trust him. And he doesn't always do what we expect or desire. And yet, as we carry on, we see that faith in Jesus is our only hope, but it's not blind hope, as we see in what happens next. Because faith in Jesus saves us from suffering and shame. Now, our unnamed lady has snuck up on Jesus in the crowd. She's sort of hiding out of sight. She creeps up on, she touches him. Look at verse 29. Immediately, her bleeding stopped, and she felt in her body that she was freed from her suffering. It works! She's miraculously healed. She can feel the difference straight away as the bleeding stops, and she knows that life can start again. Now, if only she can sort of disappear without being spotted. Now, verse 30. At once, Jesus realized that power had gone out from him. He turned round in the crowd and asked, "Who touched my clothes?" "You see the people crowding against you," his disciples answered, "and yet you can ask, who touched me?" But Jesus kept looking around to see who had done it. Now, remember that sensation of being in a crowd, maybe, I don't know, at a concert or New Year's Eve or whatever. You've got lots of people rubbing shoulders, stepping on each other's toes as they all kind of inch along. And in this big crowd of people, Jesus says, "Who touched my clothes?" I mean, what a ridiculous thing to say. Lots of people have touched Jesus' clothes. But Jesus knows that something is different. That this touch wasn't like everybody else's. It's a touch of faith. And the woman knows that the game is up. That she's going to be recognized and found out. And so she comes forward, trembling with fear. Because she knows that being unclean, having all that shame and rejection, and touching this celebrity in this middle of this big crowd, well, it's going to get her in serious trouble, isn't it? She comes up to Jesus, ready to face her punishment. But Jesus says, verse 34, he said to her, "Daughter, your faith has healed you. Go in peace and be freed from your suffering." She had faith that Jesus could help. And it's made all the difference. She believed in the only one who had the power to help. And Jesus isn't angry. I mean, in fact, it's rather beautiful. Jesus was looking for her, not because he doesn't know who touched him. Jesus is the Lord God. Mark's gospel makes that abundantly clear. He knows everything. He knows who's touched him. But he calls for her because he wants her to know that he knows her, that he cares for her, that she can go in peace. Jesus restores this woman because she believes in him, but she gets far more in return than she could possibly have imagined. It's not just that her suffering is taken away. She's restored. Her shame, her exile is taken away too. She's welcomed by the King of Kings. She's cleansed in all of her life. And the wonderful thing is that what she experienced is what we can experience too. And one day when Jesus comes again, he will restore our physical bodies so that there's no more suffering and sadness. And in the here and now, when we believe in Jesus, he restores us from whatever shame and ruin we've been in. There's nothing too much for Jesus to deal with. Jesus can forgive every shame and guilt. If we reach out to him, he'll come to us. And he'll restore us in the way that he restores this woman too, by blessing us and us knowing that we're loved by him. He's not put off by what we've done in the past or what someone has done to us, what we've been through. He knows this, and he loves us anyway. When we believe, we're welcomed, and our shame is taken away, and just as one day he'll take away our suffering when he restores his world. Faith in Jesus saves us from suffering and shame. Yet in this beautiful moment, Jairus is standing by his side thinking, "Come on, Jesus, this woman's been sick for ages. We don't need to do this now. My little girl is dying." But the even greater miracle is that Jesus, faith in Jesus, saves us from death. Jesus leaves the woman, he continues his journey to Jairus' house when disaster happens. Verse 35. While Jesus was still speaking, some people came from the house of Jairus, the synagogue leader. "Your daughter is dead," they said. "Why bother the teacher anymore?" Jesus is too late. Maybe if this woman hadn't interfered, they could have made it. Well, maybe it wouldn't have mattered. But it's too late now. She's gone. Jesus is no longer necessary because death has won and the girl is gone. But our story isn't finished because Jesus isn't finished. Verse 36. Overhearing what they said, Jesus told Jairus, "Don't be afraid, just believe." Now this is really taking things to the next level, isn't it? Jairus came to Jesus thinking he needs Jesus to heal his daughter, to rescue her from sickness. But now he needs to trust that Jesus can save his daughter from death, reclaim his daughter from the grave. And yet, remarkably, Jairus believes. Let's read on, verse 38. When they came to the home of the synagogue leader, Jesus saw a commotion with people crying and wailing loudly, as we'd understand. He went in and said to them, "Why all this commotion and wailing? The child is not dead, but asleep." But they laughed at him. After he put them all out, he took the child's father and mother and the disciples who were with him and went in where the child was. Now, we're reading a story from 2,000 years ago, aren't we? And there's always a temptation when reading about people who lived a long time ago to think that they're idiots. Jesus tells them that this child is not dead and just sleeping, and we think, well, Jesus is probably right. You know, what could they really know? This is just ancient people being dumb. Jesus knows some sort of medical trick and he's going to fix it all. But they're not idiots. And actually, if anything, they're much more familiar with death than we are today, especially death in young children. We hide death away in hospitals and nursing homes. Child mortality is mercifully low. But for them, well. So I was reading this week that about 50% of children born at this time wouldn't have made their 10th birthday, that 20 to 30% of them wouldn't have made their first birthday. So many children died that they often didn't bother giving them headstones on their graves. They're familiar with death. They know what it looks like. And they know that Jairus' daughter is dead. So just think about Jesus' words again in that context. Jesus says, why are you wailing? This child is not dead, but asleep. You can understand why they laughed, can't you? But just think about it. If Jesus is wrong, if Jesus is not able to do what he's promising, then Jesus is the cruelest of people. He's giving false hope to a desperate father when there really is none. You know, this is what it comes down to. Is Jesus able to help? How much difference does Jairus' faith make? Well, verse 41. Jesus took her by the hand and said to her, "Talitha kum," which means, "Little girl, I say to you, get up." Immediately, the girl stood up and began walking around. She was 12 years old, and at this they were completely astonished. She gave strict orders not to let anyone know about this and told them to give her something to eat. Jesus reaches down into death and liberates her from its power. She's restored to life, and she's no ghost. She gets up, she walks around, she goes for a sandwich. And we see the difference that faith in Jesus makes. Because Jesus has the power over even death itself. We see it here, and this power is open to all of us who believe in him because of Jesus' death on the cross. As we'll read about later in Mark's gospel, Jesus dies. 3 days later, he rises again. He defeats death's power so that anyone who has faith in him, whether now, whether then, whether in 1,000 years' time, well, they can be rescued from death. And that makes all the difference. Because each of us, one day, will have a moment like Jairus. And let me tell you mine. Now, a few years back, I lived in Devon, in the southwest of England. I got to know a guy called Dan. We met through the toddler group at church. We've got kids similar age. We got on really well. We enjoyed going to the pub together. He was a nurse at the hospital, a keen surfer, into punk rock. And then one day, I got a call from his wife. Dan had been surfing. He'd come home, gone to bed because he was feeling quite poorly. And when his wife went to check on him a little while later, he was dead. He'd had a massive heart attack. He was 39 years old. He left behind a wife and 2 young kids. Now, honestly, it was devastating. I had the honour and privilege of taking his funeral, and it's pretty much the hardest thing I've ever done. But Dan also believed in Jesus. And so I know that even though Dan died, I will see him again one day. Because Jesus has the power to save from death, just as he rescued this little girl. And when a moment like this comes for you, whether today, in 5 years' time, in 20 years' time, whenever, where are you going to turn? Will we truly and completely put our faith in the one who has power over death? Or will we be tempted to turn somewhere else? Let me urge you, let me plead with you to trust Jesus now. And to get into the habit of doing this, of turning to him for all things, so that when disaster comes, we're ready to turn to the right person for help. Now, friends, faith in Jesus makes all the difference. There's nothing he can't deal with. There's nothing that's too great for him to bear. Faith in Jesus restores our life now. So come to him. Bring him all that you're carrying, your suffering, what you're suffering with, the shame that you feel. And believe in Jesus, because only he has the power to help us in the face of death. He's the only one who can help. So let's put our faith in him in any and every situation.